Chris Johnson, a senior hockey writer, NHL insider, and all-around good guy, joins us down the phone line. How are you?
I'm doing well, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Would you? It's dealer's choice tonight. You want to start off a little bit light and off the ice, or you want to get right into the hockey?
Let's go off ice.
Okay. Pro or con? Where are you on the Kid Rock debate?
Oh man, I don't have much of an opinion on this one, but I'm aware of it certainly, and you know, I wonder if the NHL might like to reconsider it if they were able to do that. But you know, I hope that this too shall pass. Maybe that's the best way for me to put that one.
Well, I know there's a political spin to it. I won't go there. What I will ask you though is, we're kind of similar vintages, and we've kind of been around other sports and all of that. This always seems like a no-win to me. Now, especially in the era of social media, that you cannot, as a league, have a high-profile event and announce X is coming and performing. Everybody craps all over it. Do you not agree? Like, I mean, you can have them. Just don't make a big deal out of it, because I just don't think anybody wins.
Yeah, it does seem to be a lot of second-guessing, and you can't certainly, you know, when you look at the fans of people who love the NHL, there's a lot of different people that fall into that, and you're certainly not going to find an act that I think that everyone would love to have there, or would agree with their politics or what have you, or what they stand for. You know, I do know the league's made a conscious effort. They've hired a guy in the last 2 years named Steve Mayer, who has a background in entertainment and is trying to have bigger acts around the NHL and have these events take on a bigger feel. They had Snoop Dogg last year at the All-Star Game in Los Angeles, you know, pretty big name. And, you know, they're doing their best, but, you know, let's face it, it's still the NHL. They're not getting Super Bowl quality, you know, kind of acts playing these events. And you know, I think they're trying to promote things, but you're right. It is almost like a no-win situation, given the fallout of these sort of announcements.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about another kind of on off-ice thing, because I think you're there and it's happening right in front of you. Eric Lindros is being honored by the Philadelphia Flyers. Already gone into the Hall, so it's just another reflection on Lindros. But let's talk about him. What, when you think of the career, when you think of the embodiment of what Lindros has brought to hockey at all levels, what do you think about?
Well, you know, I think of a guy who kind of reinvented or reimagined what we think of as a power forward. I mean, certainly, you know, I was a kid and then, you know, very much remember the hype around Eric even before he reached the NHL. And, you know, there was always a degree of controversy that followed him, whether it was, you know, asking for a trade and refusing to play for the Quebec Nordiques, or various things that happened with his treatment of medical issues with the Flyers and wanting second opinions and his parents being around. I mean, there was always sort of a dust cloud or controversy close to Eric. And, you know, I'm kind of a sucker for days like this. And you know, being here in Philadelphia tonight, you can tell this means a lot to Eric. And you know, he's got three kids of his own now. And, you know, he and the Flyers have kind of long since buried the hatchet on their disagreements or
sure,
you know, some of the things that went on way back in the past. And, you know, I think that a night like this, even different than the Hall of Fame, is kind of, you know, recognizing that they put everything behind them, and, you know, that he is truly one of the great players, probably arguably the most skilled player. I mean, maybe not the most successful that's ever played in the entire history of the Flyers. You know, unfortunately, his career on some level is measured by, you know, what it could have been instead. You know, had he been healthy, you know, had he had a longer stretch of play in the league, you know, where would it be? But, you know, he changed in some ways what we think of in this sport. And you know, I think that it's pretty cool to see him honored here tonight, and see him getting even emotional here just as he's talking in front of me.
You and I both know that the idea, you know, brain injuries, headshots, concussions is you know, a huge topic, and rightfully so in all sports, but certainly in hockey. But I'm not sure that any two players, because I think Paul Kariya equally, but Kariya and Lindros, it's amazing to me. I mean, they both had longish careers, but not as productive as they could have been, because they were both felled by essentially the same guy. And I'm not blaming Scott Stevens, because it was the way you played the game in that era. But can you imagine healthy, you know, even today in what we know and the way protocols are, a Lindros and a Kariya in this NHL, where you don't necessarily have to worry night in, night out for that headhunting hit, be pretty incredible, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't even know how you'd stop Eric Lindros in a league without, you know, even all the stick fouls and things that get called now for penalties right. that didn't, you know, with how well he could skate and how big he was, and with fewer ways to slow him down or try to get him off his game that aren't permitted under the sport. I mean, it would be frightening, frankly, I think, if you were another team lining up against what Eric Lindros was in his prime with the rules of today. And, you know, he'd certainly still be someone, I think, that would be a threat to throw a big hit or do something to change the game that way just because of that size that he has. So, you know, it's unfortunate in some ways we didn't get to see these guys under those rules. You know, I do think that part of their legacies, and Eric specifically, will be tied, though, to how he reacted to those concussions, the money he's donated since, considerable amount of money to a hospital in London, Ontario, for brain research. Even today, you know, he's got the media's attention here, and you know, he didn't shy away from expressing his feelings and saying the league needs to do more research on concussions, that they're not nearly as far ahead as they should be on the issue. He says that he likes that the game and the culture on the sport has progressed, where, you know, the kind of hits that Scott Stevens threw on both him and Paul Kariya, I mean, that was celebrated back in the days when it happened. I think now, you know, we'd immediately jump into how many game suspension is this going to be and all that type of discussion. So there's definitely been an evolution in thought around head trauma in you know, professional hockey. But, you know, he took a chance today, too, to point out that the NHL is still culpable here and that they need to be doing more.
In conversation with our friend Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, courtesy of Metro Ford. A couple others, and we'll get to the ice. And in terms of just off-ice issues, Calgary's currently going through the CBA break, much like the Oilers and Winnipeg and everybody. General managers don't like it. I'm curious what you're hearing in your circles. Is this? I know that it kicked up a dust storm last year, and you know, players, teams didn't like it. Is this going to be something moving forward that the NHL does away with, or is it here to stay?
Well, it's an interesting one because the league traded it, if you recall, you know, in exchange for going to a 3-on-3 tournament for the All-Star game. And, you know, I've heard some rumblings that maybe the players don't like the 3-on-3 tournament and that, you know, perhaps we'll see yet another format change at some point for the All-Star game. If that happened, for sure, I would expect they would look to revoke this because that was essentially the deal that was made. You know, as long as the All-Star game, though, is as it is, you know, I don't see any mechanism where they can take it out of the CBA. They would have to maybe trade something back that the players don't like to have that happen. And, you know, we haven't gone through this full cycle yet where every team's done it and don't have the numbers on how they perform coming out of it and that. But I think generally the feeling is this has gotten better the way they've done it this year, trying to have teams play other teams, you know, coming out of the break that have also been on a break or are just, you know, themselves maybe a game removed from their break. So you're trying to keep the competition a little bit better because certainly teams that came out of a 5-day break last year and were against a team that hasn't been off at all, the record was phenomenally bad for those teams. It didn't matter the quality of the teams themselves. It's just, you know, even athletes at this level, you know, they don't skate for 4 or 5 days. You know, it takes a little while to get back to where they need to be. It's not as simple as riding the bike for them. So I think that there seems to be a little bit better feeling around the idea of how they structured the schedule with this. It's still a lot of breaks in a short amount of time. I mean, that's one thing coaches have grumbled about a little bit, is that you had the Christmas break, and then this, you know, comes, say, 3 weeks after that, and then it's only another week and a half or 2 weeks in some cases before the All-Star break. I mean, it's a lot of kind of disruptions in the schedule for a team, but you know, I do think that these are here to stay, and you know, the players seem to appreciate them, and you know, and since they bargained this and put it into the legal writing, you know, I don't think that by any means is it just going to disappear in the near future.
With Chris Johnston, courtesy of Metro Ford. Let's talk about a couple of the Eastern teams. Montreal, bad loss in Boston last night. They got off to a great start, but ended up losing that one in Claude Julien's return to Boston. Did not seem to go over well. Again, Montreal, and this is not a new statement, but Montreal seems like a very volatile market. Is anything going to change there?
Certainly it's going to change over time. I don't know that we're going to see short-term change, you know, because, look, my sense of the Canadians is they're getting very realistic here about where they're at and where the season is going. And, you know, for a long time, a lot of us on the outside have said this is a team that's, you know, clearly going to miss the playoffs, that they don't have it in them. But, you know, internally, teams don't make those proclamations as early as I think the media and fans do. And they were still hopeful for, you know, a strong second half, a strong mid-December on to get themselves back in the race. And then, you know, that hasn't happened. And you know, I do get the feeling that this is a front office that's kind of made peace with the fact that you know, this isn't going to be their year and that there is no turnaround on the horizon. And you know, last night's game was a big disappointment for Claude Julien and that organization because, it was a big game and there was a lot of hype leading into it, and then they fell flat. They didn't have much of an effort in that game. I mean, Boston's a pretty good team right now, and they've been on a great roll for about a month now. And you know, that leads to it. I mean, they were playing a better team and they didn't perform well. That tends to be what happens. But, you know, I don't get the feeling it's a matter of something small that needs to be done here. I think that there's going to be a more fundamental kind of conversation around that team. And, you know, frankly, at some point, you know, I think in the offseason, we're going to have to see if Jeff Molson, the owner of the Canadiens, still wants Mark Bergevin to be his GM. I mean, everything will be on the table, you know, with the way things have gone, the big moves they've made and how they haven't produced the desired results. But, you know, other than the deadline where they may sell off a few pieces, I mean, maybe we'll see a Max Pacioretty trade. I still think that's more likely a draft type of deal where more teams will probably be involved. But, unfortunately for the Canadiens, they got a little less than half a season to play, and they're not playing for too much or more than pride already.
The other team I want to ask you about before we get to some players is the Maple Leafs, and you see them a lot. Explain to me this narrative that now Mike Babcock is keeping this team, you know, from developing, that they're playing boring hockey. I know the stat is they haven't won a game in regulation in 8, but it just seems to me like this is a little bit misplaced, misguided, that, you know, a couple months ago he was great, now he's the problem. What's really going on in Toronto with the Leafs right now?
Well, the easiest way to understand it is that this is a fan base that worries about everything, that's used to being disappointed, and hasn't had too many winning things to celebrate, and they're back to their latent state now. They're back to where they are. I mean, the team is certainly in fine position with the way the divisional playoffs work. With it, there's very little doubt. It would take an epic collapse for them to miss the playoffs with how they've played through nearly 50 games now. But Mike Babcock's getting the first heat, I would say, of his 2.5-year stint now with the Leafs. I mean, everything he did for the first year, even though the team was horrible, was viewed as positive because I think a lot of people were happy the Leafs were able to get him. I mean, last year they took an unexpected leap from 30th in the league to making the playoffs, and there was a lot of excitement around the team. I mean, certainly things weren't perfect. They made mistakes, but they had taken a huge step forward, and a lot of the credit for that went to Mike Babcock. You know, this year they've really tread water in a lot of ways, and they're actually at the exact same number of points as they were at the exact same point of last season. And I think some people are viewing that as a failure, that they haven't found a way to take yet another step and look like a team that you truly consider a contender. And the way that sort of manifested itself lately, Rob, is a lot of questions about player usage and some people saying they're not using Auston Matthews enough on the power play. Some people saying they shouldn't be playing Roman Polak, and yet he's in the lineup every single night. They're playing Leo Komarov too much, and some of the younger players, like a Connor Brown, for example, has been a fourth liner, is not getting the ice time he deserves. And you know, it's creating a little bit of tension, frankly. I mean, Mike Babcock isn't enjoying the daily questions, I think, about his player usage and time on ice and things of that nature. You know, I almost view it, though, as like everybody's bored or something. Everyone's got too much time on their hands with some of these concerns, just because in the big picture, the team is in a good position. You know, they've lost 3 games in a row, but they blew all 3 games. I mean, all 3 games they were in a position to win with 2 minutes to play, and they didn't manage to, which is, it's concerning in itself. But my point being, you could just as easily in the middle of a 3-game winning streak, and none of this stuff would be getting fussed over to the same degree. So, you know, it's an interesting time. If the struggles continue, if the losing continues, you know, who knows what it could sort of bubble into, because Mike Babcock's already getting a bit short with the media, and obviously the questions wouldn't die down in that scenario. But I do think in the big picture, we're just in the middle of a long season, and people don't have enough to talk about.
Yeah, it's, it comes with the territory, right? I don't have to lecture you or explain to you how it works there, but it's always struck me that, as long as things are okay, you're good until somebody gets bored and wants better. And when I don't know how anybody can be frustrated from where that team was just 4 or 5 years ago to where they are now. You got to see the writing. You got to see the big picture here. You got to see the forest through the trees, don't you?
Well, people are impatient. I think it's part of the universe now. And
yeah,
there was almost this expectation maybe in some corners that, you make the playoffs and then you give the best regular season team last year in the league a good first round series. And, next year you're competing for a cup. I mean, the progression doesn't go that way. And there's a lot of factors that play into it. It's not to say maybe, they get healthy. They're like most teams, they've dealt with some significant injuries, which I think have hurt them at times. The season slowed them down. I mean, maybe they find something over the final stretch here that changes the view, but maybe more in the big picture, it's going to take a little longer than most fans would have liked to get to where, they truly are among the best 5 or 6 teams in the league. They're not there now. They still have a lot of good young players, and I would expect, some of these guys that have maybe stalled a bit in their second season, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, certainly haven't been as dynamic, I think, as most would have expected, but I don't think anyone will be surprised if in their third season, maybe they were. Sometimes it's not all a straight arrow from the bottom corner to the top corner in terms of progress. It is usually a few twists and turns along the way, and I think in many ways, that's what Leaf fans are experiencing, and not all of them are handling it too well.
With an eye towards the impending NHL trade deadline coming up well over a month from now, news out of Chicago yesterday, which is not good for Stan Bowman and the Hawks. It's possible that Corey Crawford may not return this year. What can, will, or won't the Hawks do, considering of how tight they are up against the cap?
Well, the first priority, I think, will be getting a firm determination on if that report is true, in that getting a clear idea if he is out for the season, because if they get to that point, they can place him on long-term injured reserve, which allows them to spend over the salary cap by his salary. And I think it does open up different possibilities for the types of trades they could make. Robin Leonard, for example, would fit quite nicely in their salary cap picture if they had that space, because the Blackhawks are a team that they were able to create a bit of room with the Anthony Duclair, Richard Ponick deal. But they are still, rather tight to the salary cap, and that's going to, I think, dictate a lot of the strategy they have going to the deadline. I mean, in the short term, they've actually got by okay with Jeff Glass. I mean, he's gone from a one-day kind of great story to, he's had a couple of weeks, and he's won some games for them. And, in the short term, given them, some steady play. But if this is something, because at this point, my sense is they don't know 100%. I mean, look, vertigo is serious. We've seen other goaltenders in the past have it and it's considerable time. I remember years ago, Jonas Hiller with the Anaheim Ducks had something similar and was out for some time. And, the fact that Corey Crawford's dealt with this in the past, is also of some concern. But, I don't think you're going to see them make a move until they're entirely sure what they're dealing with here, because it does seem like a fluid situation. And, it's one where there's some concern here for a player that might have been their MVP, you might argue, for the time he played this year. I mean, Corey Crawford was having a great season. But, there's only so much room to move and room to wiggle here with the cap picture, and they have to figure out where they stand before they decide where those moves are going to come.
Last one for you, and that has to do with actually not a trade but a waiver claim, and that was Juuse Jokinen picked up by Columbus yesterday from Los Angeles. Should we read much into that? I know that the Jackets are looking for a little bit of help right now through some injuries, but the fact that they claimed a veteran like Juuse Jokinen, does that suggest that there's nothing for them to do in the marketplace other than a waiver claim?
I think it was the easiest move in the moment. And, they lost Sonny Milano with their last game before their break. And he's a 4 to 6 week type of injury. So this was something, easy for the cost of literally $3,000, they can pick up a player who's a veteran he's bounced around the league. He's clearly on his last legs as an NHL player, you know, with him now joining his 13 this season, you know, after starting in Edmonton before getting traded to LA. And it's a freebie move, you know, other than the small amount of money involved. So to me, it's a very temporary stopgap. They're hoping that at fourth line center, he can plug a hole here for a stretch of games until they get healthier or able to make something, you know, bigger happen. But certainly the Blue Jackets are one of the teams we're going to be talking about consistently, Rob, into February, just because I sense a high degree of motivation there to make moves and you know, to get a more impact forward and you know, hopefully for Jaromir Kapanen and sake a center or something, you know, he's prioritized because they feel, even though they've kind of sputtered of late, that, you know, they have a team that can compete if they can add some strength there. And, you know, bubbling in the background, of course, is the Jack Johnson situation, which, you know, he came out and addressed yesterday after they returned from the bye week. And, you know, there's an opportunity. The Blue Jackets, I know, internally are hoping to maybe flip Johnson to another team and get a more impactful center than UC Jokinen. But in the meantime, UC's playing tonight, and you know, I would expect he'll be in for the next number of games until they're able to find something else.
Good stuff, my friend. Enjoy that game in Philadelphia. Enjoy the weekend, and we will talk to you on Tuesday.
Will do, Rob. Thank you.